Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. And when you get there, be sure to subscribe to my free newsletter. And the feature article this week is titled The Journey of Intellectual Property from Memories to Megabytes. I really had a lot of fun writing that one. And I've gotten a lot of great comments from my readers, the 10,000 folks who get my letter every week. And I really appreciate the comments that you've sent me back. And those of you who haven't subscribed yet, if you go there this week, you have time to still have time to get a copy of that article, because whenever you subscribe, we send you the most recent article immediately. So that's at jbsba.com. It's free. It comes every week on Sunday. We try to get you ready for the week ahead and by sending it out on Sunday afternoon. Charles W. Cadillac is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's Managing Director of J&W Seligman Incorporated and Chief Investment Strategist at Seligman Advisors Incorporated. He's the author of an outstanding book called Dow 100,000, Fact or Fiction. He's our good friend. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Jim, always a pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you back on the show, as always. It's a lot of fun to have you on the show. You've always got good information for us. Something happened. There's been a little bit of controversy recently at the Fed, and that controversy revolves primarily around two words. Considerable period, I think, is the other two words. And this is some of the members of the Federal Open Market Committee coming right out and saying that interest rates should stay low, should remain pretty much where they are for a considerable period. What do you think?
Well, let me put it in plain English. That says the Fed's going to remain too easy, too long, and we're going to have some unexpected inflation probably sometime in the next year to 18 months, in which case then they'll have to scramble to raise rates. They're committing to make the same mistake they made in 2000,
yep,
when they were fighting a potential inflation, when in fact the problem was deflation. They were using rearview mirror indicators like the strength of the economy, the employment rate, anything but real-time indicators of the price level. And as a consequence, it remained too tight, too long, deepening the recession, causing a lot of your listeners enormous angst because the value of their inventories were going down. It was tough to get bank loans and the like. So the Fed's going to make the opposite error this time. I don't think it'll be cataclysmic, but it's going to happen. It's likely to happen. I mean, that's what they're saying. We're absolutely willing to make the mistake of staying too easy, too long. And as a consequence, I wouldn't be surprised to see the CPI go back over 3% for a short period of time.
And so the controversy is that some of them are saying that, including, I guess, Mr. Greenspan. Those are
right.
Apparently are his words. But the controversy is that some members of the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, disagree with him, kind of as Chuck is doing. And that's where the controversy is. And the thing that bothers me, Chuck, is, as you were saying, is that they put us on a roller coaster for about a three-year period. We were on a kind of a roller coaster with regard to interest rates, and I don't want to go back to those days. I'd like to see them, you know, make teeny tiny little corrections, as you know, and kind of play this thing on a little more of an even keel.
Well, we have to stop asking the Fed, and it should stop pretending that it can fine tune the economy. I mean, I think there's nothing more humorous in a Harvard kind of way, the Fed taking credit for solving the problem it created.
Right.
What the Fed ought to do is stop creating problems, and therefore it doesn't have to produce solutions. It may not get as much applause, but all of us will be wealthier if it would just focus on one very simple thing: stabilize the price level and let us get about our business. If we just do that, interest rates would remain low and stable, as they did for most of the history of the United States, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
In 88 out of 90 years prior to 1967, long-term interest rates were never, ever above 5%, never.
But Chuck, you talked about you're fearing a little bit of inflation. We're experiencing some deflationary pressures that as our friend Gary Schilling says, that are in the good deflationary area. In other words, they're deflated prices because of good things like technology, like increased productivity, that kind of deflation, which is good for the economy.
We're
experiencing that to the degree that we've never had before, I don't think. And isn't that going to really kind of offset any kind of the inflationary areas?
Well, my good friend Gary Schilling is confusing, I think, two things. One is changes in relative prices. That is, absolutely, it's good deflation to have the fact that semiconductor productivity continues to double every 18 months. The whole technology area is bringing down the cost. Productivity gains of better than 5%, even as pay increases are, people are getting pay increases, their unit labor cost, that is relative to what they produce, is going down, which is wonderful. I mean, that's a win-win.
Hold on.
Very different than a change in the overall price level.
Hold that thought, Chuck. We're going to let you finish that right after these messages. Right back, folks. 20 tails. Stay with us. Back, it's 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show, straight ahead, we got Judith Letterman and Candy DeFink. We've also got Sam Norwood, and we got Joan Pride. And I'll tell you a little bit more about them a little bit later on, what they're going to be talking about. I'll tell you about that later on. Let's get back to Chuck Cadlick, Charles W. Cadlick, the author of Dow 100,000, Fact or Fiction, which is available wherever books are sold. And let's get back into our discussion. You know, and by the way, when I quoted Gary Schilling, Chuck, one thing I was doing was identifying what he has taught me about good deflation and bad deflation.
Yeah.
He may actually agree with you, although he's pretty bearish. He actually likes that. He likes being a bear. But the thing is,
I have a lot of respect for Gary. And he helps me think about things that I otherwise wouldn't.
Exactly.
About, so.
Me too. And I like
colleague.
That. That's what I like about him. But the thing is, you do the same thing. And the reason I'm not as worried. And of course, I'm not the expert that you are. But I'm not as worried about inflation as a big problem in the future is because the prices are nobody has any pricing power anymore, and so much of it is because of market forces, not the supply and demand issue, but just the market forces with technology, with globalization, and I don't know. I just feel that those things are going to offset some of the inflationary areas.
Well, you're right. They're going to offset some of it. But in the end of the day, inflation, deflation are always monetary phenomena. For example, they have very high inflation in Brazil today.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Brazil is open to the economy. It has...
Well,
access to high technology.
But Brazil, I mean, that's a perennial problem in Brazil.
But in Japan, they had deflation when we had stable prices for 10 years.
But they got systemic banking problems over there that created
no,
that.
No. There's always an anecdotal reason for inflation or deflation. But what my point is this: if it were just that there's too much supply in the world, then deflation would be systemic to the world.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is different countries have different monetary regimes and therefore produce different kinds of inflation or
mm-hmm.
deflation, given the common technology of the world. So our Fed produced deflation, not the Chinese producing an abundance of goods and services. In fact, I'll make you a bet. If inflation goes over 3%, I will bet you that you will read an article, more than one, blaming the Chinese for inflation because they're growing so fast and demanding so much of the world's resources.
Well, let's
same people who blame China for deflation because they were producing an abundance of goods, we'll turn around and blame them for inflation if it happens,
mm-hmm.
for demanding too much.
All right, Chuck, let's say that you were the trigger man at the FOMC at the last meeting a couple of weeks ago, and you were the trigger man. It came down to you, and they said, okay, Chuck, you're the guy. Whatever you say is what we have to do. What would you have done with rates?
I would have said what we need to do is target the price level. The price, and we need to start intervening based on that real-time information. So I would have, frankly, I wouldn't target interest rates. I would target the price level directly.
Mm-hmm.
And if I saw evidence that was rising,
based
I would
on, all right, on based it. On the price level, what would you have done?
What would I have done? I would actually, in the margin, I would start buying bonds a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I would start shrinking the monetary base or slowing the growth of the monetary base just a little bit until the
mm-hmm.
price of gold started going back to around $350 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Where
gently,
is it now?
Very, very gently.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I don't think interest rates would, if anything, I think interest rates would go down, long-term interest rates, because people have more confidence, more trust. The Fed wasn't going to make the mistake of letting inflation get out of the bottle again.
Well, do you think, oh, by the way, as you know, at least one of the central banks of Europe, was it England or was it the European
England
Union?
Raised rates.
They raised rates a little bit.
Yep.
So, which I thought was kind of dumb for them. Didn't you think that was ill-advised
for them?
Well,
it's the whole problem trying to manage the economy by moving interest rates up and down.
But what I'm getting at, though, I mean, they've got major economic problems in Europe. Why would they be hurting the entrepreneurs who could be trying to emerge over there? But higher interest rates hurts an entrepreneur.
All you're doing is underlying the incoherence of the way we even execute monetary policy today in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with what you're saying, but they are doing mainstream economic stuff.
Yeah.
Let me just shift for one second. The other reason interest rates are going to go higher is a good reason, which is real returns on capital are going up because the economy is recovering nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And so as real returns on capital rises, you would expect real returns on fixed income instruments to rise somewhat as well.
Right.
You capture that between the TIPS, so-called TIPS spread, which are the inflation index bonds relative to governments.
Right.
That will tend to open a little bit as real rates move higher as they were in the last half of the 1990s.
One last question is on the Fed. They seem to not believe their own eyes in the 90s when productivity was growing. They believed that productivity had to lead, increased productivity had to lead to inflation. Do you think they get it now? Do you think they now understand that we can have 4% growth and high productivity without having runaway inflation?
I hope so, but you know what? I think they make it up as they go. And they, I mean, seriously, but if you look at the Fed was fighting an inflation that didn't exist.
Right.
They had produced stable prices. There's nothing more powerful for economic growth than a price-stable environment. As they produced stable price environment, the economy grew faster, and then they blamed, or they feared that high growth, which was the product of good monetary policy, was somehow going to lead to inflation,
mm-hmm.
as if people cause inflation. The Fed causes inflation, not
right.
People going to work producing goods and services.
I'm going to have to play your little soliloquy back there to Bob McTeer when he's on the show a week from now.
You and I have to have dinner with Bob sometime.
We have to do that sometime. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back with Chuck Cadlick. We're going to get Chuck to look into his crystal ball and tell us how things are going to be next year. He can do that, by the way, folks. He'll do that right after these messages. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Charles W. Cadlick is our guest and our good friend, the author of Dow 100,000 Fact or Fiction. He's with J&W Seligman & Company. They produce outstanding mutual fund products that you can find out about with your financial planner, with your investment advisor, your stockbroker. Right, Chuck? They can find you guys all over the place, can't they?
That's exactly right.
So any ideas, any particular things that you'd like to say about your products?
Well, right now, looking at the economy, we do think the economy is going to remain strong. I mean, this part of the cycle, especially with the likelihood of interest rates moving higher, long-term government bond values, prices will actually move lower as interest rates go higher over the short term. So I think there's real risk in that part of fixed income, and I would favor REITs, a diversified portfolio of REITs for those who need current income relative
mm-hmm.
to a government bond, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But for equity investors, small-cap stocks, small mid-cap stocks are still very much the place to be over the next year, given where we are in the cycle. And, of course, you know, they don't go up every day. They don't go up every week. But given our view of the economy, I think it's reasonable to have an expectation that that would be the part of the market that would outperform over the next year.
Any particular sector that you're excited about right now?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest question before we even get to sectors is, you know, bonds versus stocks and what's your overall allocation. I happen to believe that technology is still going to continue to surprise people on how strong it is in this recovery. I believe that last half of the 90s, we actually were that prosperous, and there's no reason we couldn't return to that kind of prosperity. In fact, I think we are returning to that kind of prosperity.
Right.
Dot-com boom, that won't reoccur.
Right.
But all that technology that we learned how to use in the last half of the 90s will be used and deployed and is being
right.
Employed.
What you're saying is that the tools... The tools were real. The way we applied those tools, some of it was fictitious.
Right, but we had to learn.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly. So, we're now learning how to apply those tools that we still have in productive ways. The internet didn't go away because the dot-coms died. And I say the dot-coms, I mean because of the proliferation of some of the ones that had bad business models. Just because of that, that didn't mean the internet went away. We're now learning how to use cyberspace in productive ways. Efficient ways that we had to go through what happened in the 90s to get to this point.
Right. I think the most important thing that in the third quarter with the GDP growth, everybody read 2 weeks ago was out
7.2%. Yeah.
But that happened while inventories were drawn down by $35 billion. So if we just maintain the lower level of inventories in the fourth quarter, that will add actually almost 1% to growth.
Right.
The fourth quarter. If we just replace $35 billion, that'll add a 1.5% to growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a high probability the fourth quarter will surprise people on strength. I would guess it's going to be, again, north of 5% growth. It could be north of 6%. And I think that growth, that strength will kind of carry into the first half of next year. What we know, and I remember we turned decidedly bullish summer,
mm-hmm.
and for the exact same reason I'm going to say now, you have a stable price environment or even a low inflation environment. You have significant tax rate reductions like we did this
right.
year. You always have above average growth and above average equity market returns.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the market, the stock market for your investors, my view, remains reasonably valued. You look at the price earnings ratio of the S&P 500. It's a rule of thumb way to think about valuation.
Mm-hmm.
Based on your ahead consensus earnings, it's only a little bit higher than it was at the end of June. And it's only a little bit higher than it was at the end of 1995. In 1995, those next 4 years, we had that great bull market run. We're not saying we're going to have that kind of an explosion in equity prices over the next 4 years, but it's hard to argue that the market's overvalued today when it's about where it was at the end of 1995.
What?
So when I add those three things up, I'm saying that things are looking very positive over the next year to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, even though deficit spending is not good for us long term, it's currently, in the present time, it's good for the economy, isn't it?
The real issue is government crowding out the private sector, and the rapid growth of government spending relative to the size of the economy is a negative. It crowds out the private sector.
But the spending is not good in the marketplace?
Well, the government takes the money from us to spend, and it usually spends it less efficiently than we would.
Yeah, but they buy product. Products, I guess, is what I was thinking of. They're buying goods and services, I guess.
Yeah, but they're taking the money from people who would have otherwise bought other goods and services. And I happen to believe that actually a rapid increase in government spending is bad for economic growth. It only looks good in the kind of the accounting sense that we keep the numbers.
Right.
You don't look at the opportunity cost.
Chuck, I got to wrap it up. Good job today.
This is cheap. Escape velocity. This is now a sustainable recovery.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate your help.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job today. See you later, folks. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for joining me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.